This is Charlottesville Tomorrow. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonprofit organization engaging the public on critical quality of life issues so we make informed choices for our community's future. Visit us on the web at seavilletomorrow.org. On November 3, 2015, voters in the Scottsville Magisterial District go to the polls to elect their representative on the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors. This recording is Brian Wheeler's August 27, 2015 interview with Republican Earl Smith. Smith's opponent is Democrat Rick Randolph. Mr. Smith, thank you for participating in this interview with Charlottesville Tomorrow. The complete audio recording and written transcript for this interview will be available online. Information from this interview will be used in the compilation of the Nonpartisan Voter Guide being co-produced by Charlottesville Tomorrow, The Daily Progress, and the League of Women Voters. Charlottesville Tomorrow does not endorse any candidates, and our goal is to provide information to the public so they can make an informed vote on issues primarily related to land use, transportation, public education, and community design. As you are aware, the first two questions you will be asked have been provided in advance. For the others, you have been provided only the topic in advance. All Albemarle supervisor candidates will be asked the same questions. We ask that you keep these questions confidential until all candidates have been interviewed. Each candidate will be provided an opportunity to review the excerpts selected for the voter guide before its publication. Are you ready to start?
Yes, sir.
Question number one. Please describe your past experience that qualifies you to be on the Albemarle Board of Supervisors.
The most important qualifications are honesty and integrity, and I will match mine against anyone's. I have lived in this area most of my life, and I'm sure you can find folks who think I'm a little outspoken. I don't think anybody would challenge my honesty and my integrity. As to the ability, I feel like I possess good judgment, common sense, and compassion, and I intend to listen to the opinions of others around me no matter who they are or what they represented or what letter they may have behind their name. I already work with all sides and different points of views in my daily life to accomplish goals, fix problems, I create new ideas to better my surroundings, and I've been a successful business owner, retail and restaurant. I've worked as a field consultant for a national franchise responsible for over 40 stores here in Virginia. I was lucky enough to have parents who valued hard work and the knowledge to be self-sufficient. I've learned trade skills like plumbing, electricity, carpentry, and mechanics from my father that I still use today. I'm not afraid to get my hands dirty or sweat, and that is what we need now more than ever. I don't pretend to know all the answers, but you better believe I am not afraid to ask the proper questions in my search for those answers. What I'm asking for today is an opportunity, and that an opportunity to put my heart, my soul, my integrity, and my decades of experience as a resident, a business owner, and a rural landowner, and a person who wants to make sure we have the best county that reasonable taxes can buy.
Question number two. What is your top priority for action by the Board of Supervisors if you are elected?
My top priority, I have to just refer to a quick theory a wise man once told me. It's like a bar stool, and a bar stool has four legs. And on top of that bar stool is a bowling ball, delicately balanced. And all those things, you've got to look at each leg as a taxpayer, infrastructure, today's needs and tomorrow's needs. When you take something away or add to any one of those four legs, what happens? The bowling ball moves, and you don't want it to fall. So you want to, you know, precariously keep that thing on there. So what does that mean? I think my top priority is to understand how everything works here, which I'm doing now as a new person. I'm going through and trying to read the comp plans and trying to understand this, all these other things that are popping up. One of the biggest concerns in all of Albemarle is the internet access too. I think I have been asked that by teachers and business people alone. And it's just not, I think, what even in my particular area, I have like Kale, where it's 5,000 or 6,000 homes. They have fast internet. Where I live out 20 South in Woodridge and all those areas, you know, I had to get HughesNet so my son could go on Blackboard at school. It cost me $90 a month, you know, to get school lessons that he could have gotten at school. Something else when I was looking up, we're ranked 126 out of 133 for public safety in the state of Virginia. That's just ridiculous. You know, that's something else that's totally unacceptable to me. And if I'm elected, I'm going to make sure I stay on top of that the whole time that I'm on the board.
Question number three. Name one specific area of the county budget that you are concerned about and tell us why.
Being new to this again, I'm going to refer back to just from being a regular citizen and the things that I think about, you know, of course, the public safety thing, again, that comes back up. I really do think we need to reexamine our priorities. The budget needs to be examined on a line-to-line basis. Current situation does not automatically equal higher tax rates. Back to the barstool, the stool theory. You've got to find some way to keep that bowling ball on there. One of my biggest things that I found out that I don't think a lot of the citizens know, that 10 cents out of every dollar from our personal property goes to the city of Charlottesville. That equals out to 20% of our budget. And what I also find amazing is they've tried to amend, forgive me here, it's called a composite index, and it's a formula that's based on what we have in taxes. And we get grant money back from the state or funds, well, they don't take in consideration the 20% we send. So we miss out on things that other counties are getting. That was started back in 1982 when the city wanted to annex over there where Kmart is at, and it's not working. We always end up being 20 to 30% shy on our budget, and this needs to be looked at again. You know, we don't have any say of what the city of Charlottesville is spending the money that we send. And like I said, 10 cents out of every dollar goes from our property taxes goes to the city.
Question number four. Business leaders and social service agencies have told local government that new investments are sorely needed in the area of early childhood education. Will you make pre-K education and quality child care a priority, and if so, how?
Again, from personal experience, both my parents worked. My mother was a nurse. My father was a police officer, and then he worked at a telephone company. My dad worked overtime constantly. I remember going to Clark School, and in the kindergarten teacher, my mother and father spent an incredible amount of time with me, reading and writing. I had basic skills beyond a kindergarten school, you know. And I remember the teacher saying he's going to be a troublemaker because I already had those skills. How does that relate to what we're talking about? How important it is for parents to be part of this. Now, I know in our society we've got a big divorce rate and there's a lot of single parents, but there's still a way for them to be involved. And I'm a big proponent of everybody being involved in what their children do and what their children learn. For the government, for us to say, let's mandate things for the kids to be, take them somewhere and drop them off, they learn better from the parental unit or uncles or aunts or brothers and sisters. Now, for underprivileged children and the parents don't, or the single parent that doesn't have that choice, then certainly we should have a choice. Should that be a burden on the school? I don't know. Should that be a burden maybe that the businesses should help pick up? When you invest in your employees, you've got a good employee for life usually. So maybe we need to look at that side instead of always putting it off on something that's a public-sponsored thing. Why can't businesses step forward? You know, University of Virginia, I don't know if they have a program like that. I don't know if anybody else that is a big player here in Charlottesville-Almar has programs like that. Be worth finding out. So, again, not putting it all back on the taxpayer.
Question number five. How should Albemarle County fund water resource programs to clean up local streams and comply with state mandates for protection of the Chesapeake Bay watershed? And a follow-up, would you support the creation of a stormwater utility fee similar to the one enacted by the city of Charlottesville, which is based on the amount of impervious surface on a property?
I've been to two meetings about this, and boy, do I got a lot to say about it. I understand it's a mandated program, and I agree that we all should be responsible stewards of our watershed, but I also think there are more solutions than what's being looked at, and I also think there's certainly a whole lot more questions to be asked. We're getting the hurry, hurry, hurry version because all of a sudden we're playing catch-up. You know, because this is something that was mandated federally down the state level to, and back in the 80s it started. Number one, why are we waiting so long? Number two, when I went to these things, and even in the pamphlets they show you, or if you go online to the Elmore County website and you look under this thing, they'll show you photos. And one photo will be this pristine, cute little creek that's going through the landscape, and another one's a raging brown inferno that's tearing up the soil. Well, if you look at them, that's not the same picture. So why are we using misleading photos? It's like, you know, even the name Storm Water Management, you know, that's like a movie that you're going to go watch. It's very, very scary. You know, it's a rainwater tax. It's the way we need to manage the stuff that comes out of the air into our streams. You know, Richard Lloyd, who's running for Ravana Supervisor, he's an engineer. He's retired. Him and I talk about this extensively. He is so knowledgeable about what's going on. You know, he actually said something, and I told him I would give him props for it, and I hope he says it when he comes in here. But he said, why are we requiring beyond normal, which the plan is calling five steps beyond normal, but they haven't had enough evidence to support where normal begins. So how are we going to go five steps beyond where normal is if we don't know where normal's at? You know, so there again, there's a mistake right there. How are you going to take money out of somebody's pocket that they've worked hard for to pay for something? I have looked it up on the internet, and I don't know if anybody here has. There is lawsuit after lawsuit about this going on in the whole country, especially when you say utility. Now, I live on 25 acres, 10 miles out of town, half mile off the road, in a little 24 by 32 house. My parents live right next door, kind of same house. We have a garage and two houses. You know, 1,000 feet each way is woods and bushes and trees and field and... and what's happening is people like us are taking, if they decide to do a utility, they're taking their county to court and winning because the judge says they're not part of utility infrastructure. You're not using any of the county's water or sewer. So how are you charging me a utility fee? Now, does that mean I don't think we deserve to have something due? No. But like when I went and made a suggestion, I said, why don't we put it, you're telling me that 80% of it comes from our vehicles. You know, they gave Barracks Road as a big polluter. And the lady in charge was talking about the gas and the oil and the brakes and the brake dust and this and that. And I said, well, I'd rather have a $15 extra fee on my vehicle than you come into my house and hiring another 20 people to come and measure impervious surfaces. So we're catching up, but we're hiring an incredible amount of people to work, which that might be a good thing, but I mean, do we need them? You know, is that a waste of money? And the money that we're having to generate is to pay for them. You know, my other question was impervious surface. I know a little bit about dirt. Even if we had rain for 2 weeks solid, the dirt doesn't get soaked any more than about 6 or 8 inches. And that's even after winter, and we have red clay. We have land that doesn't perk. Fluvanna is full of it. Now, again, that's another county, but where I live, we have red clay. That doesn't soak up the water. It runs on top of the water. That's an impervious surface. So, again, I think this needs to be looked at more, and I think having only one group that went and measured the bugs in the stream, which I'm not making fun of the scientists, but even I asked, I said, we've had a lot of heavy rains. It goes from my feet, you know, the water goes from barely covering my feet up to my knees. You know, how fast do those bugs procreate to fill back up for you to look at? I got I got the funny looking face after that. I don't, you know, nobody answered me. I wasn't making fun of it. I really wanted to know. So that's how I just think it needs to be looked at more.
Question number six. In the remainder of 2015, or during your first term, if you are elected, should the board make boundary adjustments for Albemarle County's designated growth areas to create new locations for business on land that today is in the rural area? Why or why not?
This designated growth area thing, it's been ignored, and now it's become such an issue because of revenue. What does that mean to us? It's a burden on our infrastructure, our water supply, and our traffic. Again, as a person just coming in and loving information, and I look at the comp plan, and I call somebody I trust. You know, like if I would call you and say, Brian, do you see on this page, and I'm counting six interchanges or on-offs off of 64, and not one of those is a designated growth area. But I can go to another county in the part of the state or somewhere else that I know, and you look, and everything that is off the interstate is full. That's where they grow. Oh, I don't understand why we have nothing. There's nothing. So that brings up the 6429, you know. I think that was totally mishandled. The fact that I feel the Planning Commission overstepped their commitment to the citizens by going 5 to 10 steps beyond what was being asked of them, when realistically our county leaders were saying, look, we have to go somewhere. Can we make a small amendment one time to possibly use this piece of land for a business? Now, what that does is it's just like you raising your hand and asking a question, can I go over here to possibly better myself? So the Planning Commission just said, no, you can't do that. So what does that mean? It means that our taxes are going to go up because we don't have any light industrial stuff coming in. We're a joke to most of the state. I called a legislator up in Richmond and said, is Albemarle County ever considered for, like, when a business calls and says, hey, we'd like to come in the state of Virginia? And he goes, no. We just tell them no. I don't like that. I don't like, you know, so regardless of whether this can't be named brewery, can't come there, I think people are missing the fact that all we were asking for, all the leaders were asking for, was a chance to maybe get this looked at, which, number one, would put VDOT on notice to fix exit 118B. You know, that's what they said. Let's put that up at the beginning. If this is going to happen here, we're going to have to fix this. What if the brewery couldn't come? There's already been a traffic study now, a land study, all this other stuff that maybe another business would go, well, if they can't be there, maybe we can come in and be a better fit. But again, the Planning Commission just went, no. So that has to be changed. That's probably about it on that.
Question number seven. Describe a part of local government that would benefit from increased cooperation by the city, county, and or the University of Virginia, and that you would make a priority.
I think pretty much that Charlottesville, Albemarle, and UVA has a great working relationship. And I've lived here my whole life. The only time I have ever heard of anything was if the county was building too close to the city line and the city goes, oh, boo, I want some money, or something's happened, and it's just like our family or our friends. Anytime money comes up, we all get the fussing a little bit. So that's really the only thing that I've seen that happens. One thing to bring up that I don't know about, and I'm researching and trying to find out, but I had a friend of mine call, and he let me know that one of his best friends, he went to the hospital that the guy's daughter had gotten raped. And what does that mean here? He said he was incredibly taken back by the fact of that he didn't feel that the police officer, and not against nothing about the police, he said they sent a woman and she didn't have any compassion, he felt. He didn't, and he questioned whether she had been trained to deal with a rape victim. He said when he went to the ER, you go in the normal public part of the ER and you're sitting there with a kid that's been hit in the face with a baseball and somebody's broken their leg or somebody's throwing up from the flu. So how can you imagine this woman or young girl that has possibly been raped has to go in there and go up to somewhere and say, I've been raped and I need a rape kit and all that, in front of everybody. I wouldn't want to tell either. So I would like to see, I think if one thing that I would make a priority, if it's not there, I think that it ought to be a hotline or something that the fact that it goes to all three entities and those three entities have a, some kind of group or trained police officers or trained staff that could do specially for that. I think when you go, instead of you going to the ER, the police could call. They could escort the person. Not trying to put a whole lot extra on the police, but I mean, this is something that's a serious thing that they could follow up on. You know, they could call ahead. Go to the door with the blue dot on it. You know, doesn't mean they have to have a special room, just means give them a different access and give them a different part so they feel, number one, safe, and they feel like somebody cares. Because I can't imagine having to go through that, or a parent that would have to be sitting there with their son or daughter that has possibly been violated by somebody else, and you know, the rape kit is automatically another violation, you know, because now they've got to be touched in the area that they've already been touched that they didn't want to be touched in, you know. So I think there needs to be a little bit more compassion and a little bit more training on that stuff, and especially with the UVA requiring that of their students. That's the first thing that came to mind when this question was asked. So,
requiring what of their students?
The requiring of the sexual oriented, the thing that Teresa Sullivan just said, you know, make sure that we all know what's going on. This is where you do. This is what you... I don't know how involved that is, so again, I'm still researching it, but if I find it, it's not... I think that would be a great thing for us to do as a city, county, and UVA relations, because that way I think our young ladies or even young men, you know, there's young men that get this happens to. And I found that I actually trained my young men at work. They, you know, they always think they're safe and you come get robbed. And that's one of the biggest statistics is the sodomy of a young person, the young male, because they won't tell, you know? So it's more of a female issue, but it also happens to males, and there needs to be something in place there. We've had national headlines from the poor girls that were murdered here, and then plus the rape cases at UVA. You know, that's a progressive way to look at it, and a good solution that I think will help heal the community.
Question number 8. What improvements could be made to our community's placemaking efforts?
I had to Google this one. you know, I Google it and I read it, and I think a lot the placemaking, you know, just pretty much says what can draw you. I mean, in layman's terms, what do we have in our area that you can build around that is already a draw? Almar and Charlottesville are such a diverse thing. You know, we have the Walk Mall that brings a certain persons. We have the breweries here. You know, we have all the wine here. We have, of course, Thomas Jefferson's house. And so I don't know specifically what we could build. You know, if you're talking about if you're including something in a subdivision that's really going to bring, you know, we already have that here. You know, but then I went through and I found an article that broke down stuff, you know, and just to kind of go over, you know, placemaking is community driven. We already have that. It's visionary. We got a lot of visionary people here. Function before form. Sometimes I don't see that. Is it adaptable? I think that we could improve. I don't think we have a lot of adaptability here. To go over, let's see, flexible, again, that's adaptable. The things that it's not, it's reactionary. We have a lot of reactionary things here. design-driven. We have a lot of design-driven stuff that's being built here. So I don't see a lot of, if you're saying what is and what is not, if you're saying that's not, we still got a lot of design-driven stuff here. So you're not placemaking. One size fits all, that's not done either. And cost-benefit analysis, that's not done. So I think it's a hard fit. It's easy to say placemaking is a great thing for a larger city that has an incredible amount of citizens. You know, it's like a borough to me, or like when I lived in Pennsylvania and you go, and or even New York, when the first time I went to New York, you know, every block is its own entity, and you got your baker and your butcher and your places that, you know, you go, and it's almost a self-sustaining kind of thing. We're so spread out here. You know, like I was explaining to a lady when we were talking about the brewery again, you know, going on 2964, and she goes, are we going to get another brewery? And I go, name a brewery that's really inside of Alamo County. And she goes, well, we got to. I'm like, no. I said, inside? And she goes, Earl, you're right. I said, so that's how you got to think about this stuff. You got to think of the boundary lines. You know, we're also used to just getting in our vehicles or getting with friends and driving somewhere. You know, drive 20, 30 minutes somewhere to get to Nelson County or get, you know, to Afton or to go to a destination. That's nothing for most of us here that grew up here or even comes here. That's why people come here, because there's so many little quirky things within 20 miles or 30 miles. You know, it doesn't take any time to get there. So I don't really know if placemaking, again, I'm not an economic major. I had to look it up. I understand it. I think we already kind of have it here, but it's just so spread out. I don't see where it's going to fit.
Question number 9. How would you describe the challenges and opportunities facing Albemarle County's rural farms, fields, and forest?
I think one thing, a lot, our taxes are running a lot of people away. Like my father, you know, he bought that in 76, paid an incredible amount of interest rates, 12-17% back in 76. You know, it's horrible. But he came out the other day and he goes, you know, if they keep wanting to raise the rate and then they want this stormwater thing, he goes, I don't want to live here anymore. And I'm going, God, I've lived here since I was 12 years old. You know, I know every blade of grass and every tree, and it's like, but it's one of those things where you look at it going, can I afford it? I think our farmers are not utilized enough. I don't think that we get a lot of land lease stuff, which some of these people do great, but that stuff goes somewhere else. I'm glad the land's being used, you know, versus just nobody using it. The perfect example is Viewmont Farm across from my house, you know, Charles Hurt, and they leased that day. Boy, that's a top-notch organization compared to when UVA owned it, when Kluge gave it. It was nothing but weeds and the fence was falling down. You know, that's one of the problems I have with UVA. They don't take care of things they get for free. What does that have to do with rural areas? A lot of it's in rural areas. You know, we're getting slammed. What it goes back to, developers are coming in and sucking up that 200-300 acre farm, and then they go through all the stuff and they divide it up, and next thing you know, we got another subdivision that's eventually going to need a $20 million high school and an $80 million high school and a $20 million elementary school. Regardless of whether they tell you or not, it's going to be there, I would say, within 10 or 15 years. I think that we could utilize our rural areas a little bit better. I am really looking into things to help the farmers in my area. I actually went to an industrial hemp meeting and learned all about it, and it's not pot. You know, learned that how well it's doing in other counties. I learned that the Virginia Tech is going to be a research school. That was one of our greatest products. You know, the Constitution is written on hemp. A lot of people don't know that. A lot of people don't know that the products you get out of it, how fast I think 1 acre of hemp does more for paper than like 10 acres of trees. You know, there's your don't take away your forest, you know. So that stuff's got to be pushed through legislation. Does that mean I'm for smoking pot? No. It just means I'm looking at something that was part of the farm life that we could possibly grow again, and it's got caught up in regulation because it's associated with something that has nothing to do with it. You know, I think that we don't look at the rural area can also be. We got a tremendous amount of retirees, not specifically here, but there's probably 10,000 a day retiring, you know, from the baby boomers. We need to make sure that if those people are going to want to retire here and come here, guess what? They don't bring the problems we have. They stay off the road pretty much. They don't bring their children to get in our schools. They hire all our plumbers, electricians, carpenters, you know, roofers. They spend an incredible amount of money, and just in the general knowledge that they have, you know, retired engineers or school teachers or mechanics or anybody that you can utilize their brain from something that they're retiring from. We need to also attract more of that. I think some of our rural areas would benefit. There's a place called Leisure World that I learned about. It's on 610 acres in Maryland. It's a 55 and over community. It's not a retirement. It's a gated thing. They have their own shopping, you know, like the grocery store, and they have like little stuff there. And they're their own entity. And you have to be 55 and older to be there. You know, it's not full of golf courses. It's just a community. Wow. You know, I actually showed Wendell Wood that for Somerset. I said, you know, if you're talking about, I know him and Chris Dumler were talking about doing something there. And that doesn't add to any of our problems and brings in an incredible amount of revenue. So, yeah, the rural areas are important to me, and I'd like to see. I'm an old softy. I'd love to see the old farm stay there, and I like all that. But I understand also that it's coming, you know. So you can't fight things all the time.
Question number 10: what is your top transportation priority, and how will it be funded?
I didn't understand this when I thought it meant public transportation, but now that I do, I really think that most of our transportation problems, again, go back to our poor planning of where we put things. You know, we overloaded 29. We stay away from the places that can handle the traffic for on and off. You know, we keep going to a two-lane road where we could come off of a major highway and it'd be right there. I really believe that our transportation problems have come from that. I'll say again, that fiasco on 29, that 20 years ago, I was working for Miss Utility and I was out marking the phone lines when they decided, some engineer decided what we have now at Rio Road was the be-all, fix-all, do-all. You know, I remember when there was trees there. I remember when you got to the mall and the mall was not even there, you know, and it took forever to get to Greene County. But I think going like this interchange thing, I know it's, I don't even like talking about it, but to me, it's a $235 million do-over from poor planning. And do I think it's going to save 3.5 minutes? Are you kidding me? As a business person, if I had an employee come up to me and said, you got to pay me, you know, it's going to cost you a set amount of money for us to save 3.5 minutes, and you can't equate that, and you try to do your little figures and equate that into what your labor cost is going to be for that week, that's just really, my head would explode. You can tell I'm at a loss for words for this stuff. I had nothing to do with it. If I was there, boy, I would still be fighting and kicking and screaming about it. I don't like it now. But I can't do anything about it, really, except maybe next time if I am elected, in my common sense and my tenacity to fight for what's right and to tell people that's really stupid. I'm not afraid to say stupid. If I have to stay there till 4 o'clock in the morning every time we're discussing it, they're going to hate me. That's just ridiculous that we as citizens of Alamar County need to put up with something like that, that, like I said, 20 years ago was the fix. And now it's not.
And question number 11.
There's a question 11?
What areas of the current comprehensive plan will you concentrate on for implementing improvement or monitoring?
The comprehensive plan, I've been reading through it. This is probably, and again, this is, I'm an honest person, this is probably my weakest thing because I'm playing catch up. You know, I work every day. I take care of my retired parents. You know, that doesn't mean I don't have time to get on this stuff, but reading through a thing that I had a friend, well, actually Richard Lloyd printed some of it out, and he brought it in, and I was going, what the heck is that? You know, I thought it was a new Harry Potter book, how thick it was. He goes, this is only half. I'm like, oh my God. Anyway, I've been reading through, and I'm trying to, anything that's relevant now or what they're talking about, I'd go to that section because it is no sense in me starting at the beginning and going and trying to understand things. But I do have the ability to, and I'm smart enough to look up something, and then I write my questions down, and then I call people, you know, and somebody even like you, I'll say, Brian, what's your opinion, or what have you reported on this, or where can I look this up? I'm an information junkie. I retain a lot of stuff in my big head. That's all I can say. I think the growth area, it would be my main concern because that's what I've been looking at now. And like I brought up, the interchanges off of 64, you know, I've called people that are officials in other counties and say, can you look at this and explain to me how you would deal with this? These are people I know and I trust. And they give me a non-biased opinion, you know, of this is this way, this is where this is at, this would make it better. You know, if I did this, this is what I would look for. You know, and I get three different opinions, and then when I research those three, I pick which one I think is the best, and I form my own. So in the comp plan, if we don't want our taxes going through the roof, we're going to have to do something about our growth areas. That's just bottom line. There is no way around it. It's here. And if you don't like it, you're going to have to go after your leaders and say, look, let's fix this. Because they're the ones that this plan is not sent down from the heavens and written in stone is the way it's been treated. You know, it's a plan. It's a plan on how our future could be. To me, that's a hypothetical thing. You know, it's no different than writing a P&L statement for a business. You think this business will be here in 5 years. I don't know if that makes sense. It makes sense to me. You know, that comp plan is no different to me than a P&L statement. So the growth area is what I would look at. Sorry for being so long-winded on that.
Thank you. Earl Smith, thank you for participating in this interview with Charlottesville Tomorrow.
My pleasure.